No, we won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No, we won't take it.
Good morning and welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. We have a great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, we have Queen Wisconsin, and in the second hour, we're going to have Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine, and then we're going to speak to the United Wisconsin County Coordinator so we can get some updates on the recalls in their area. And we're going to finish off the show with Richard Pinney. I'm sorry. I knew I was going to screw that name up no matter how hard I try. Richard Pinney is going to be talking to us about some of the interesting laws that are already on the books regarding the birth certificate situation in Wisconsin. It just came out, and I thought people should know about it. The phone number to call in today is 310-742-1896, or you can call toll-free at 877-497-1797. I also have a live discussion online on blogtalkradio.com. That's where you can post your comments or any questions you have. But I want to start out, or I should say, I'm just going to go right to Yuri here and start out the show. Good morning, Yuri. How are you?
Good morning, Sarah. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. I'm all right. I'll get better as the show goes on, I promise.
Well, we're going to try to limit pronunciation of too many names, although there's few that we need to cover. There's exciting news happening all around us because we live in exciting times in the state of Wisconsin, but we have another potential candidate for governor, State Senator Tim Cullen, who is representing Janesville and the rest of the district, is announced that he has interest in being the Democratic nominee. And, of course, on the Republican side, it's really quite amusing because there's a discussion of where is this other candidate who's going to run against Walker. And Walker, of course, is pushing this idea himself, like, well, where is this person that's running against me? And, of course, it would be the least responsible thing to have a specific person to run against Walker until the petition signatures are gathered, because this allows Walker to campaign against someone. As it stands right now, he has nobody to campaign against but himself. So that's a perfect shadow boxing position that he is in. But Tim Cullen is really a very interesting candidate. There was a good column about him. There's a lot of stuff written about him. He has had several political lives. He's retired. He was retired for a long time after being a state Senate majority leader and has come back and was obviously one of the 14 that left the state. Would be a very, very interesting candidate, thought-provoking idea for sure.
Well, he's your senator. What's your take on him?
My take is that, well, as far as I know, he is universally known. But, of course, that's where we live, is we live in his district. And I think that when Tim ran his campaign for state senate last year, it was, fairly not complicated because he's so well known in our area. Whether he would do just as well in other parts of the state is frankly a little bit hard to judge. But his record is being a very moderate senator, being highlighted by Scott Walker in that phone call with what he thought was David Koch, really says a lot because Tim is the kind of person who is comfortable reaching across the aisle and working with others. In fact, he and Dale Schultz had this tour, Common Sense Tour, where they were going around and kind of showing that Democrats and Republicans can work together. So I think that his candidacy, the strength of it would be, is that it would appeal to moderates and independents and perhaps some Republicans, especially Republicans who are very disenchanted with Scott Walker, and there's a growing number of those. And the very liberal elements of the Democratic Party would be hopefully driven and energized by the fact that we need to get Scott Walker out of there. So between those two tendencies, I think he could be potentially a very strong candidate.
Well, what else do you have for us this week?
Besides that, we have 21 laws that were signed by Scott Walker into law, and really, it is quite interesting, and you can share some specific information on the laws as you should. But I just get a kick out of the fact that Scott Walker wanted to get so much done so quickly, and all he's getting out of this is he's saying all of these laws that are, we're seeing them take place and play out, and how horrible they are for Wisconsin. And so by the time the recall rolls around, it's going to be pretty obvious that, for instance, the voter ID law is backfiring on the citizens and residents of Wisconsin in a tremendous way, because there's a great story about this 84-year-old lady, Ms. Roselle Frank, from Brawcaw, Wisconsin, who's been voting since 1948, is an elected leader in her community, and is now no longer able to vote because of this voter ID law. Some of the comments actually on that story, I found an interesting bit of information that this law that, of course, is designed to, well, supposedly to get rid of voter fraud, but effectively is expected to cut down on minority voting, is likely to hurt the elderly and the disabled perhaps even more than the minorities. According to UWM numbers study they did in 2004, 23% of people in Wisconsin over 65 do not have an ID, and 98,000 of people between ages of 35 and 64 have no picture ID. So, 47% of African Americans have an ID, which means 63% do not. 43% of Hispanics, this is Milwaukee County numbers, do not have ID. I mean, it's. But the cool thing is that because he did it so early on, by the time the recall elections roll around, we're going to have spring elections. And people are going to see in the spring elections that this voter ID law is just pure madness, and how difficult that election alone is going to be. So I'm really curious to see how things develop, because I'm really hoping that for the sake of our democracy, this voter ID law is gone soon. But what do you want to say about 21 laws that Scott Walker signed into law? Well, Bill signed into law.
It's amazing. I didn't even get through all the lists. There's a couple of them. The trespassing law he signed in. I call it the kill your neighbor law, the legal kill your neighbor law, or murder your neighbor law.
The castle doctrine.
Yeah, the castle doctrine. That's now in, and he just. Apparently, he decided that he was going to wait. This is just his MO. He just waits until we're busy doing other things, and then he pushes this crap through. And that's exactly what he did. He waited. We're in the Christmas season. People are going crazy. The recall's going on. There's other things going on. And here he is. Here's 21 laws, including the legally kill your neighbor. So it's part of his MO.
It is part of his MO. And the talking to... some attorney friends, they're really concerned about this because it just opens up so many, as always, these kind of extremist kind of legislation have all sorts of unintended, even by those people that, I guess, created them, maybe they didn't care about them, consequences, where there's some domestic disputes where a person would be legally within their rights to shoot their wife. So there's just all sorts of effects of these legislations that we're going to have to be dealing with and are going to have to work their way through courts, which is why it's important to have good judges in place. Oh, my goodness. What else we got? We got Scott Walker.
The recall.
Yes, he lives in some kind of an alternate universe, which was always the case. But it appears to be shrinking, because as he continues to put out his spin on things, it continues to crash with reality at such a hard angle as to I cannot see any other way where his number of his supporters does not decrease and diminish just by the pure fact that his statements do not reflect reality. The fact that PolitiFact is coming out with one after other release highlighting that Scott Walker said this in reality is not even partially true. It's just false. You know, I think that the next level he could raise to is pants on fire, but I think having that red light over there saying that his statement is patently false is important, and I think it's reflective of the fact that reality just doesn't match Scott Walker's expectations. His statement that recall started before he took office, false. His statement that Norbert College poll is frequently wrong, false. It goes on and on and on. And, of course, his statement about Wisconsin being such as a leader in job creation and making fun of Illinois is backfiring on him already, because in October, Illinois was number one in the country with 30,000 jobs created, and Wisconsin was number 50 with 9,700 jobs lost. So you
you figure. And the interesting thing, actually not the interesting thing, but the thing people have to remember is this. When the man opens his mouth, he lies. That's just the way he is. For some reason, every time he opens his mouth to say something, it's a half-truth, it's a lie, or he twists the words to make it sound one way and it's actually another way. That's the way Scott Walker has operated and will operate. And it's unfortunate that we have a governor who chooses to operate the state for his best interest and not for the interest of the people who are living in the state. Now, I have a question with small businesses. In Janesville or in other areas, do you have a sense of how business people, especially the small business people, have changed their support of Walker?
You know, I think right now everyone is, on one level, is concerned with holidays and then trying to get through this, which is supposed to be a big, big season, of course, for retailers. But I'm seeing that on a practical side, while you would usually see small businesses try to stay out of politics as much as possible, we actually have several businesses in town, including a notable, very popular eatery called the Italian House, which allows people to have their parking lot on Sundays when they're closed and to use it for signature gathering. And even that small gesture has been kind of created a little bit of a firestorm in our community, because now we have people who are saying, criticizing the owner. And, of course, on the other side, you have people who are supporting the business owner and are trying to drive his business up to thank him for stepping up. And actually, I should thank the owner, Edmund Jalabi, because he actually hosted a fundraiser for me a while ago. But, you know, that was something that was an event of mine. This is something that is community-wide event, and it has been actually subject to quite a bit of discussion. So seeing the small business owners who are so concerned about not losing customers by getting political, become involved in the recall effort, it says something also. You're right.
Well, and this goes out to everyone who shops the small businesses. Let's support those who are allowing us to have the recall, set up recall tables in their parking lots, in their stores, in their areas. Let's support them, because by them doing that, they are getting harassed. The neocons are harassing these people, these store owners and the different people that are helping out. And they're calling them and repeatedly calling them and repeatedly getting them to try to get the people out of their area, out of their parking lot, whatever. So when you see petitioners sitting out in a parking lot or they're in a store, make sure you make a note of that store and then go back and shop at that store. Keep that store's business going up and let them know that you appreciate the fact that they're allowing to be there, because that's really the only way we're really going to be able to offset the stuff that's going on.
Well, and I couldn't agree more, because you know what? We are a silent majority no more. We're now a vocal majority, and there's no reason why supporting recall shouldn't be a good business decision for a business, because if all of the people that are involved in recalls support the businesses that support the recalls, they're going to do well. And you know, this is a capitalist society, and there's no reason why supporting the will of the people shouldn't make a small business owner be a good decision for them. You know, I think that's how democracy works anyway. The other story that we should cover is that there's a lot of misinformation going on out there about the districts and the boundaries as another consequence of the new boundary changes and another legislation pushed through by Scott Walker, because we have all sorts of Gerald Recall, they're putting out some correct maps because his district office is giving out incorrect information to constituents, trying to stymie that recall effort, and that is really happening all throughout. There's misinformation about voter ID bill. People are being told on the county, different counties are putting out information saying you need to have a picture ID in order to get a voter ID. There's just, you know, people should be really kind of careful and look for good sources, you know, frankly, such as United Wisconsin. And Government Accountability Board, I think, has been fairly good, although they run into problems as well. So these are kind of challenging times.
Well, the interesting thing about Fitzgerald, too, just a side note, if anyone's in his area, that he is telling his constituents when his listening sessions are, but then he's giving different dates to the people that are supporting him. So he's not even giving the constituents the right listening date sessions, apparently.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe the number, maybe he screwed up on the dates or whatever, but, you know, take it for what it's worth.
Probably the final thing we need to cover is all the excitement happening at the Capitol, the Capitol permit policy that, you know, requires 72 hours, and, you know, if you have more than four people, you need to let them know, which on one hand is resulting in some humorous side effects where people are organizing spontaneous events on Facebook, and at the same time, you have very serious blastback from national news outlets such as NPR, Raw Story and many others. Keith Olbermann announcing and talking about this, actually story with Rozelle Frank, and calling Scott Walker that fascist bastard Scott Walker. So, you know, the good thing about Scott Walker is he's being such a spectacle that he is bringing so much national attention to his own recall. And, of course, he was for recalls before he was against them, because that's how Scott Walker rose to prominence. So for anyone who questions the validity of having a recall against the governor, Scott Walker himself became Milwaukee County executive through a recall.
Yeah, it's interesting. If it's going to support him, he's for it. If it goes against him, he's against it. He's pretty transparent. That's the only transparent thing about this government in Wisconsin, is the fact that Walker does that.
Yes, it's all about the money and the trail of money, and it's never very long, because it usually leads to one or two big contributors, and then it stops right there. And, of course, Scott Walker's spin on the recall is that the people who are gathering petitions are being paid, and that this is his fight against big union bosses. Well, if you look around you, and anybody can do that, everybody knows somebody who's gathering signatures out there. So people know that this is another lie, and this is how Scott Walker operates.
Exactly. Well, on that, I will let you go. I know you were having a nice day, enjoying the time out.
Absolutely, I always enjoy.
I was going to say, I know you're not in Wisconsin.
Day.
I know you're not in Wisconsin.
But,
so enjoy.
No,
good luck, and I will. We'll talk with you next week then.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on, Yuri.
Take care, Sarah. Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye. That was Yuri Raskin. He is with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Update. And you can read his stuff online on Facebook. And I believe it's a website, but I don't have it. I'll get that to you. You can see what's going on. He's really good about posting every other day on the news stories of the day. So keep up with him. We will be right back with Amber Smith from Clean Wisconsin.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Another global warming conference, another foot drag by the Obama administration. UN climate talks are currently underway in Durban, South Africa, but they aren't going anywhere thanks to the White House. That's why 16 leading environmental groups just sent a scathing letter to Hillary Clinton. They noted that when he was president-elect, Obama vowed to help lead the world toward a new era of global cooperation on climate change. But now, they say, America risks being viewed not as a global leader, but as a major obstacle to progress. They point out that the U.S. is being obstinate about not signing any binding agreement to limit global warming until China and India are fully on board. Instead, the U.S. is still pushing voluntary pledges, which is a major setback, said the environmental groups, which include the Sierra Club, the NRDC, the Union of Concerned Scientists, Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Wilderness Society, and the World Wildlife Fund. These groups also said that the Obama administration was stepping away from a previous commitment to provide funding to developing countries to adopt technologies that won't destroy the ozone layer. These retreats on global warming are as puzzling as they are devastating. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I'd like to now welcome Amber, if I can get this to work. Amber Smith to the Sarah Schultz Show. She is with Clean Wisconsin. Well,
hi,
welcome,
Sarah.
Amber.
Thank you. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Can you tell us a little bit of a bio first before we jump into the mining bill?
Sure. I'm the Government Relations Director at Clean Wisconsin. We're an environmental organization that has been around for 41 years now, working to support laws that protect clean air, clean water, and promote clean energy.
Well, and what are the main points? We're going to jump right into the mining bill. What were the main points of the bill that you found?
Well, the main point is that this is no better than the bill that they leaked back in the spring, which was by all accounts one of the worst environmental pieces of legislation that anybody had ever seen. It makes sweeping changes to environmental laws for the benefit of this out-of-state mining company to come in sight in the North Woods, and it disregards public's right to get involved in the process and try and prevent pollution from happening, and it just has gigantic rollbacks to environmental laws, from protection for wetlands in the area, groundwater protection for, you know, people's nearby wells or drinking water, ability to, you know, do a lot of things with streams, like reroute them or fill them, all for the benefit of mining, and really just drastic environmental rollbacks to promote mining in Wisconsin.
Well, what's the difference between this mining bill and the last mining bill?
You know, we're still trying to pore over the details, but I'm actually surprised by how little difference there is. They seem to have made some tweaks to the first bill, and that's about it. Some of the most egregious things, or most of the most egregious things, are all still in there. Things like being able to fill in wetlands that in the area where Gogebic Taconite is planning to build the mine, and just to kind of step back and tell all the listeners that that's really what this bill is about. It's about changing the laws for this one out-of-state mining company that wants to come in Ashland and Iron counties and dig this strip mine. And so they want to change all the laws to be able to make their operation as profitable as possible. And, you know, the problem is that it changes all of mining laws. In the meantime, it's changing laws not only for this one company, but for any mining company coming into Wisconsin. So, you know, the immediate effects will be felt in the North Woods, but, you know, we don't know where else the effects might be felt in Wisconsin.
So the bill focuses specifically on the iron ore mining, and then it just kind of opens up in other areas to all minings, or is it specifically really geared towards this iron ore mining?
It's very specifically geared towards this iron ore mining. The bill is specifically written to take off the environmental protections that our more general mining laws have now, so that they don't apply to iron mining anymore, and rewriting the statute so that there's a new statute that applies to iron mining, which is much more relaxed and allows them to do a number of very damaging things to the environment, and, you know, cuts the public's input into that process.
Is there any protection in that bill for the environment at all?
That is a great question. Well, there's still DNR review, and in as much as I'm sure people at DNR would intend to do the right things and want to make decisions that are protective of our natural resources, it also takes away their ability to say no if they find there's all this language in there about how if the DNR finds that the public benefits of a mine exceed the natural resource harm, then it's okay. Now, DNR should be making decisions on permits based on science, right? You know, that's what they do. They're there to protect the natural resources and to protect the public. This bill says, well, you know, if there's some harm over there, that's okay if you find that there's a public benefit to it. So it's really quite something to turn DNR into that social science agency as well, and take them out of the scientific realm.
How can you make that decision, though? How can you just say, well, I know we're going to have poison water, I know we're going to have a lake where the mountain was, but it's okay because it's going to help 20, 30 people with jobs? I mean, how can you actually make that decision until after it's happened?
I do not know. I don't know how they are possibly going to make those decisions. I mean, they are hydrogeologists. How are they going to make that decision? I mean, if you think about it, probably how they're going to end up making that decision is based on political pressure, and that's not the way that the DNR is supposed to operate. And this is putting them right smack in the middle of huge political fights and in the middle of decisions that are not going to be based on science. I mean, there's a part of this bill that actually says DNR doesn't have to so there's all these studies that a mine company has to produce when they apply for a permit, hydrogeology studies, wetland studies. I mean, there's like 20-some odd number of studies that they have to produce in order to get a permit. The language of this bill that actually says that DNR doesn't have to look through them and make sure that they're good. So usually that's what DNR would do. They would pour through these studies and make sure that they've got all the right information to make a sound scientific decision on. But this bill says, no, don't bother doing that. You know, let's just trust that everything that they gave us is okay.
That the mining company gave in their permit.
Right, right. And then not only that, but then at the end of the process, they take away the ability of the public to get involved through contested case hearings, which is what allows the public to question that data.
So they're not even opening it up for people to even look at and ask questions on the data?
Not on the record, no. I mean, they will say, well, we're allowing for public hearings, but a public hearing is much different than allowing the public or a group like mine to get involved in the details on the record, on a legal record, and be able to question experts on, you know, these studies and be able to, you know, bring in their wetland expert and question him about the impacts of putting, you know, mining waste in this high valuable wetland. There is nothing but let's just trust that they're going to do the right thing and trust that they're going to give us the right information in this bill.
Are they going to be able to get around proprietary information? So when the mining company hands this in and they don't just say, well, we can give you this information, but the rest of it is proprietary, is there any way around that at all, or is that just something they're going to be able to get away with?
That's a great question. I don't know how that's going to play out. I mean, there are specific things that they're going to have to produce, but in as much as, you know, I hate to say it, but I've seen a lot of untruths come out of this company's mouthpieces. You know, they were up north. They had their first meeting up north, and they told the people there explicitly, I've listened to the audio, no, we're not seeking any legislation. And yet, you know, a few months later, this horrible bill draft came out, and now we're dealing with it again. So, you know, I just don't trust them already. And I think that sound scientific decisions should be made based on science, not on, well, let's just trust that they're going to do the right thing.
Right, because companies are so good at that. Look at the
right.
bankers. They're
right.
so good at doing
right.
the right thing when left up to their own devices.
Right, exactly.
Is there any protection at all in the mining bill that protects the company against lawsuits, or is that or other excuse me, is that other bills that are already out there right now that do that?
There are. They remove citizen suits from this bill. So a citizen who feels that maybe a permit was issued improperly by the DNR does not have the right to sue anymore. That is part of current law. It's part of any number of different laws. I mean, I could file a suit against most industries right now, you know, if I felt that they were doing something wrong. So it's actually carving out this new law for this company that says, we don't really want to hold you accountable for anything.
Well, what is it the company would be doing that they need protection from?
Well, for instance, you know, since we all know now that the DNR is going to have to make their decisions maybe not based on good information, maybe not based on scientific decisions, then normally you, for instance, would have the right to come in and say, hey, I don't think that you guys did the right thing here. Let's take a look at all of the information and make sure that this permit was issued based on all the right decisions. You know, maybe you question that there was too much politics involved, which there likely would be on the way that this bill is drafted. And you want to question that as a citizen. This removes your right to do that. It's very, very bold to remove the rights of citizens to have input, legal input, into a process that's going to impact our Northwoods so greatly.
Wow.
It's pretty sweeping.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what those go through. Now, has this mining company actually put in a permit to do any kind of mining at all? Have they put in any kind of permits at all for this mine yet?
They have not. They have not put in any actual permits. I think at one point I'm actually not sure. They may have a permit to drill, but I'm not positive about that. But they could be doing all their exploratory drilling right now. So they're saying, you know, the process is too long. We don't have any certainty. We need to speed up the process. But they have voluntarily stopped their efforts. They could be doing all this background work right now, getting ready to submit their permit, you know, and hope that this legislation is going to pass. But they're not doing that. And I think that there's a very good potential that they're not doing that because they know what they might find when they start drilling is going to be a lot worse than what they're telling people right now. For instance, they're saying that we need this new mining law because Wisconsin's current law is made for sulfide mining, and sulfide mining is pretty bad, and it produces acid mine drainage, which is really, really bad. But iron mining doesn't do that. Iron mining is pretty safe, and you don't have to use as many chemicals as you do with sulfide mining. Well, the problem that they don't tell people is this iron deposit that they're looking at up north is so deep that they have to get through so much rock to get to it, and we know the geology of that area says that there are sulfides in that rock that they're going to have to get to. So when that sulfide gets exposed to... I'm sorry, when the sulfate gets exposed to oxygen, that's what creates acid drainage. And that's what is the potential to cause the really, really irreparable harm to our waterways. So if they drill, they find these sulfates, then they don't have as good of an argument to make that they're not going to cause environmental damage. So if I had to speculate as to why they stopped, I might speculate that that's why.
Because it's going to prove that they will do more damage than bringing the good into the community, and so the DNR can't even use that.
Yes. I mean, they're really banking on this law to pass to get started, and that's really unfortunate because our current laws do offer adequate protections for our environment. They balance the need for mining because Clean Wisconsin is not opposed to mining on its face. If it can be done in an environmentally responsible way, then it should be allowed to proceed, but this company is basically saying, and this bill is saying, we can't do it in an environmentally responsible way, so we need a bunch of exemptions to be able to do it. I mean, one of the other egregious parts of this bill is there's something called a legislative finding in it. So you're putting in statute something that says, because of the fixed location of iron mining or iron mineral deposits in the state, it is probable that mining these deposits will result in adverse impacts to our natural resources. Then I'm going to skip ahead, but that is presumed to be necessary. That is stated right in this bill. So it's very obvious that they know there's going to be gross environmental damage here, and there's nothing they can do about it. And they want to just say that it's worth it. It's worth it. And I don't think that we need to give away our natural resources in order to have economic development. I think that there's a lot of other areas that we can focus on for economic development besides, you know, saying that the very backbone of what makes us Wisconsin, our clean air, our clean water, our natural areas, we can sell to the highest bidder. That's kind of what's going on right now.
Wow, that's sad. That's
depress you on a Friday morning, Sarah.
That's all right. That's all right. You know, and I have to take a break, so we're going to take a quick break here. We are speaking with Amber Smith with Clean Wisconsin, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Union-represented podiatrists are fighting for fairness in the way they're paid for podiatric care. It's an issue that impacts access to podiatric care for working people who often work physical jobs and therefore need more foot care. OPEIU Guild 45 President, Dr. John Mariachi.
The OPEIU, we were the first ones that started independent union or guild to represent physicians. And I believe that the clout and the legislative exposure of having a union behind us gives us some strength and ability to get our thoughts to the table.
OPEIU podiatrists want equal treatment and respect when it comes to the way the managed care health system treats them. OPEIU supports proposed legislation in Congress that would make it easier for low-income people to get foot care under Medicaid. OPEIU President Mike Goodwin says the bill, H.R. 3364, would also save the government money through preventative care. Americans United for Change has launched the Romney Gecko 2012 presidential ticket with a video called Morning on Wall Street. Spokesperson Lauren Wiener.
Romney has a long history of job killing in the private sector, and we think that that needs a lot of attention, and so we're going to try to do that with this campaign.
You can check out the Greed is Good Romney Gecko ticket at romneygecko.com.
And under the leadership of Mitt Romney and Gordon Gecko, the 1% will be richer, stronger, and better off. Even if the rest of us are unemployed, homeless, and hungry. It's morning again on Wall Street.
The Obama administration is the first to use federal spending to apply affirmative action to help workers with disabilities. Jesse Russell has more.
The Obama administration is seeking to increase the number of disabled people receiving jobs through federal contracts. The unemployment rate for disabled workers is substantially higher than the national average at 13%. The goal of the new administration rule would be to see disabled workers accounting for 7% of the employees hired by federal contractors. This would be the first time an administration has used federal spending to apply affirmative action for individuals with disabilities. The rule would place specific requirements on contractors that would encourage an increased hiring of workers with disabilities. However, the rule does not require contractors meet quotas. Before the rule is approved, it will be open for public comment for 60 days. Depending on the results of those comments, it could be activated as early as February.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sorry, that was a little bit of a production problem on my part. We are coming back, and we are speaking with Amber Smith right now, and she is with Clean Wisconsin. Now, Amber, I want to start off talking about the contribution. Now, I heard on a Madison radio station that the West Virginian company that owns this mine has given Walker a $10,000 campaign contribution. Is that correct?
Yeah, they've contributed to a number of Republicans. They gave $10,000 in contributions. So this is Gogebic Taconite and their officials. And this is, you know, who they're writing this law for, this wealthy out-of-state mining company. They gave $3,000 each to the Fitzgerald brothers this year in campaign contributions. And I would imagine there's probably more to come if they do what they're being told to do with this bill, which is give away Wisconsin's resources for the benefit of mining.
Now, what's the difference between this mine and the mine that was in Ladysmith? Because Ladysmith right now is dealing with a bunch of problems with their water. They're capping wells. There's just the streams are getting poisoned. What's the difference between that and what happened there?
There are different kinds of mining. So the Flambeau mine was copper mine, and the Gogebic Taconite mine is an iron mine. But anyway, the difference is that, you know, supporters of mining will hold out the Flambeau as kind of the poster child for great mining. You know, they'll say, look, they came in, they did this mine. In fact, if you look up their website, it's like promises made, promises kept. Well, recently they've started doing some tests on the water and found that there's a bunch of toxics in the water, and there is some litigation pending right now that is trying to see if that is coming from the mine. I mean, you know, it's in a river right near the mine, so chances are probably pretty good. But, you know, they've turned this big open pit into a nice lake now, and they have nature trails around it, biking trails and things like that. So, you know, it's probably a nice place to go, but it looks like it's very possible that it's polluting the river nearby. And it just goes to show that even their poster child for mining has the potential for long-term environmental damage. And then what if we don't have the opportunity to participate at the beginning of that process and try and prevent that damage, you know, do we have any real opportunity to do anything about it later?
Well, there's no way. There's just no way you can actually fix a problem that's of that magnitude. You can't clean the water. You can't put the stuff back. You can't fix it. Well,
you can't give people their health back either, you know, from drinking toxic chemicals.
That's true. And since we don't have to clean the water anymore, you know, that's okay. Now, when we're talking about the mine, I don't know if people know some of the, in my point of view, it's destruction that the environment, that happens in the environment with the mine. Can you talk a little bit about the mining process so people know what we're talking about when we're talking about the environmental destruction here?
Sure. And there's pictures on our website. Please do visit cleanwisconsin.org, and it'll show you other similar strip mines. So a strip mine is basically digging a giant pit in the earth, and the deposit that we're talking for this northern Wisconsin mine is 900 feet deep. So, you know, think about how deep they're going to have to go. If you look at the pictures, you know, a big tractor or a big dump truck looks like a little speck in one of these pictures of these mines. There's some similar ones operating in Minnesota. So it's a big, ugly, open pit where a beautiful mountain range, high-quality wetlands, Class 1 trout streams exist right now, and we're going to jeopardize all of that.
And then there's no way, once it's done, it's done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, this is, I think, a 22-mile stretch that they have the rights to. So if you think about that, you know, I'm in Madison right now. So think about from Madison to, I'm trying to think of how far that would be, like towards Milwaukee, you know, my brain is like drawing a blank on any
city.
It's
like Cambridge. Isn't it like Cambridge?
Yeah, there you go.
Madison,
so from
Cambridge.
Think about like a 22-mile open pit from here to Cambridge. It's unthinkable. You can't even imagine it. But that's what they're facing in the Northwoods.
And they talk about reclamation. Does the bill cover any reclamation at all with it?
Yeah, they will have to be responsible for reclamation. But the interesting part also about this bill is that right now a mining company has to continue to pay into a fund for 40 years and to basically be responsible for 40 years for any environmental damage, you know, much like we're seeing at the Flambeau mine right now. Might be possible that, you know, there's very long-term damage done here. In this bill, they're trying to cut that down to 20 years. So they're trying to say, we don't want to be responsible for that long. It's just one more giveaway for out-of-state mining interests. It's unbelievable that we would put our resources up for sale like that and just remove accountability for a company that's coming in and admittedly doing damage to our environment.
What's the trade-off here? If you put the mine in, how much would you lose in the tourism? How much would you lose in your hunting, your fishing, your camping, your hiking? What's the trade-off looking at right now?
I think it would be very large. I mean, a large part of our economy relies on tourism, as you well know. You know, Wisconsin is second in the nation in out-of-state fishing license sales. We've got a robust natural resources economy, tourism economy that we rely on. And, I mean, nobody's going to come and fish near a open pit mine. it doesn't make sense. Nobody's going to hunt in that area. People aren't going to want to camp in that area anymore. And it's just going to really ruin the face of the North. There's a lot of these, there's some of these mines in northern Minnesota. And in that area, it's not a place where they have a tourism economy anymore. The mine would be in the Pinoki Mountain Range, and it's really a stunning area. It's a finger that comes out into Lake Superior ultimately. And if there is a possibility that any contamination or environmental harm would flow to nearby Lake Superior, think about the huge devastating impacts then. That's an area that a lot of people recreate in and rely on for natural beauty and for other economic value that could potentially be ruined. I think we all hold, especially our Great Lakes, very dear to our identity. Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, they define us geographically and, just are part of who we are as Wisconsin. We can't jeopardize them.
Is there anything that we can do to stop this bill from going forward at all? I know it just got released. It's not going to be in the assembly at all for at least a couple weeks, if not the first of the year. But what can we do to help stop this?
Well, absolutely show up at the public hearing. There's a public hearing at the State Fairgrounds in Milwaukee next week. And that is really something in and of itself because they dropped this 183-page bill yesterday and they're having a hearing on it 6 days later. This is complicated stuff. It's a complicated bill. Even people like us who have been focusing on it for a long time are having trouble pouring through it and knowing the details and knowing what it means for Wisconsin. And so we encourage people to go there and, talk about how this isn't right for Wisconsin. This isn't what Wisconsin needs. And contact your legislator absolutely and let them know that this is not what we should be doing is rewriting our mining laws for the profit of an out-of-state mining company.
And when was that? That was in Milwaukee. When was that?
Milwaukee, next Wednesday, the 14th at 10 a.m. at the State Fairgrounds. The Assembly has said that's the only hearing that they will have.
Well, that's nice because since it deals with everyone up north and they're doing it in a time when the weather can be kind of bad up north, it's nice that they're doing it down in the southern part of the state for people to
It'd be hard to get much farther away from the mining site than that.
Maybe by doing it by the Illinois border in Illinois, maybe. But
yeah, right. Could go to Racine, I suppose.
Yeah.
Kenosha.
Kenosha, right by the lake there in Kenosha.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, this was a deterrent, so they wouldn't hear. They'd get the business people in, but they wouldn't get the people that would really be affected by this down.
Yes. I mean, they had a hearing up north about a month ago, but there was no bill to comment on. It was just kind of a show of who's for mining, who's against mining, and that's not really helpful to anybody that lives up there and is going to have to deal with the details of this bill and what it means for their community.
Wow. All right, so if people want to go help, they just go to that, or they contact Clean Wisconsin. You guys can direct them to maybe groups that are up north.
We'll have information on our website, on our Facebook page, Twitter. Please visit us at cleanwisconsin.org. Like us on Facebook. Join our action network, and we'll keep you apprised of every move that's made with regards to mining.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Amber.
Thanks, Sarah.
Sure. We're definitely going to have you back on again, especially maybe a couple weeks down, maybe after the Wednesday session. Actually at the first of the year and talk more about this because there's going to be a lot more going on. And I think people really need to know what's in this bill so they know exactly the damage and harm that's going to be happening up north that will just affect all of Wisconsin.
Great. I would love to.
Wonderful. Well, I'll speak with you then. Have a great holiday and good new year.
You too, Sarah. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Amber Smith. She is with Clean Wisconsin, and they're a great environmental group started by our Secretary of State, Doug LaFollette, and they really keep on top of the environmental issues in Wisconsin. Now, I have a segment I want to play. I've been trying to get this on for a couple of weeks, and it hasn't been able to get on, so I'm going to put it on now. This is a segment I taped on November 15th at the Midnight Party in Walworth County. It was the Midnight Party to kick off the Walker recall. We had 36 people show up in the red Walworth County area to sign this petition, and I just kind of went through the crowd and picked out people and asked them why they were there, asked them what was the reasoning at midnight they were going to come out and sign this petition. And these are the stories I got. So I want you to listen to why people are signing the recall petition, and it's in their voices.
What brought you out here at 1201 to be the first person to sign the Walker recall petition?
I just thought it was really important to get out and try and recall Walker.
What was the reasoning for that? Is there something in particular that happened that he did that you weren't...
Everything. I'm just really surprised at how awful and how surprised, you know, he was so underhanded.
Mm-hmm.
With everything that he did. It really made me angry.
I think from day one he's wrong in what he's doing and how he did it. And I think the majority of the people in the state of Wisconsin is going to voice their opinion and let the world know that the rich people aren't in control. It's the majority. So.
Do you think that the million signatures can be gotten in 60 days? Do you think this is going to happen?
I think so. I mean, Ohio proved it last week, and I think that's going to carry some weight over here. And so once the word's out that this is on, let's go. Let's go get them out of there.
I feel that Walker needs to be recalled. He's messing up people's lives by having people not be able to pay for, like, Medicare or stuff like that. Not Medicare, but, like, Medicare. And have to pay for, like, states paying for the IDs, for the taxpayers.
So is there anything in particular that hit your life or touched your life that caused stuff?
Yeah. He took away programs from the prison. He took away the 75% you can get out. Like, if you do 75% of your time, you can get out early. And now my boyfriend can't get out early because Walker took it away.
What is he in prison for? Just curious.
He just got revoked.
Okay.
So he didn't even do a crime.
It was something simple.
Yeah. And if he would have had the 75%, he would have been able to get out, but Walker took it away.
Yep. Yeah. So do you think the Walker recall will happen? Do you think we can get a million signatures in 60 days?
I think we can.
Do you think the people of Wisconsin are going to stand up and say?
Yeah, I do.
I think he should be recalled because I've actually, for the Badger Care, I had my insurance taken away because I don't really know the reason, but I think it's cool. So.
How does that affect your life with your Badger Care being gone?
I have a thyroid problem, so I can't really get my medication because I don't have a job and parents to help me. So that means I can't get my medication to help myself or anything like that. And that also means that I can no longer go see my doctor without having to pay buttloads of money out of my pocket, and I really need that insurance. And I was put on a waiting list, which there's thousands of people already on, and there's no chance that I would get it back.
So basically you can't get the health care that you need now because Walker took it away from you.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And it also makes me worry about my niece. And she's only 3 years old, you know, and my sister can't afford, you know, to help her get insurance, you know, on her own. So that, what does that leave my niece with, you know? So.
Do you think we can recall Walker? You think this will be successful?
Yes, definitely.
So you think a million signatures in 60 days is something that's definitely the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, if I'm pissed off and I'm only 19 years old, who else is out there that's really mad, you know? There's tons of people that this is, like, affected. So.
Well, I think it's been pretty important since Scott Walker started the history back in February on Ash Wednesday, that I've been upset with his strong-arm tactics and the way he's gone about doing business and destroying our bargaining rights. It's one thing to help contribute with pensions and health care and stuff, but everything that he's done and included in with that is just the wrong way of doing business, of dividing people, dividing middle class against middle class, and it's just a terrible way to do politics, and I've had enough.
Were you directly affected by the collective bargaining at all? Or?
Oh, yeah. I work for a municipality. My wife works for a municipality. My son works for a municipality, and his wife is a school teacher. So, you know, you can't even, you're in such a position then, you can't even help each other out. You're all in the same boat. So it's not right, and we got to fix it.
How are you doing financially now? Are you more financially strapped? Are there things you can't buy now? What are you looking at because of these collective bargaining set of?
Yeah, our contract expires, you know, the end of this year. So we don't really know exactly what our city administrator is going to do. Our meeting is set for December sometime. Besides the pension and the health care issues, it's whatever else they decide they want to do, whether it be our working hours, overtime pay, you know, we snowplow, and I think a lot of those services won't get done the way the taxpayers are used to getting them done. So it's we'll find out. You know, between the two of us, it could be over, you know, like $1,000 a month pay cut. So.
Well, that's negatively affected the way where you spend at the local businesses you go to and the things you've done.
Yeah, it's, you know, and they say everything's working, but the numbers really haven't come down yet. You know, it's all just smoke and mirrors. And you give it another year on top of this, and you find out that your schools are still suffering, and your services aren't being done the way you want. And all of a sudden, you'll find out, you know, a year from now that it's not working.
So, do you think that the state of Wisconsin will be able to recall Walker? Do you think a million signatures in 60 days is doable?
Well, I don't think that's an issue at all. Besides people who kind of woke up now that aren't. Working for municipalities or whatever, are finally realizing what's happening, and had no idea when they voted Scott Walker in what was coming, and they say, geez, if I would have known, I wouldn't have voted for him. Well, it's so you're going to have all those votes that he originally had that he's not going to get this time around.
Well, I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep tonight without being here and being part of this historic effort to recall a governor that has so radically changed the face of Wisconsin this last year.
Has that change affected your life at all personally?
Oh, absolutely it has. I work for a union that represents public employees, and he hasn't decimated our union, but he's definitely made it more difficult, and he's made our members, public employees, more fearful for their jobs. That's what we hear all the time. People are afraid.
Are they worried that just tomorrow they could just lose it for any reason? Or
yes, they are worried that if they stand up for their, speak up for their rights, question the employer about anything, that they have a target on their back now and can be replaced.
And that's new with the Walker administration then?
Yes, that is new because under a collective bargaining agreement, you have protections, you have things like just cause, and you have a process that is fair and equitable for everybody, for both sides, the employer and the worker, to resolve issues and problems, and that's taken away from us.
So do you think that the state of Wisconsin can actually recall Walker?
I have no doubt that we can do that. The energy and the enthusiasm from union members and just lay citizens also is out there. It's incredible. It is still high energy level. Yes, I have no doubt that we can.
I had to be here to do it the first moment I could. I just, for my state.
Is there anything in particular that drew you? Is there any one issue that drew you? Is it the collective, all of it, or?
Well, the major one is the collective bargaining issue because I am a union member with AFSCME, so it's very, very important to my life. But also there's so many other things I could go on for hours. Clean water, the way our governor has treated the elderly with their just decimating the spirit of our great state of Wisconsin.
So do you think that the state of Wisconsin will be able to get a million signatures in 60 days?
Actually, not a million. We're hoping for a million, but we don't need that many. 540,000 some odd signatures, and absolutely do, especially after Ohio. I really think we can.
I'm very concerned about education in the state of Wisconsin, and I feel the direction that we're moving in is the wrong direction, and the recall hopefully will be able to get people throughout the state of Wisconsin to take back what I think is very, very important, which is our public schools.
Has that cut in the education affected you directly?
Oh, most definitely. I think that teachers throughout the state of Wisconsin, this is a great state, a state that's very, very pride-filled with interest in trying to make a difference in students' lives. Educators, I think, are being feeling hard-pressed in believing that the state government, especially at the governor's office, is not in favor of public education as we have known it in the past.
Do you think that the state of Wisconsin will be able to get the million signatures to recall Walker?
Oh, I'm very confident that that will take place. I think, and again, the real issue will be the candidate that will run against the governor.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That was the people I sat with and spoke with on November 15th at 12, it was between 12 o'clock and 12:30, and I couldn't believe the stories I got, especially the 19-year-old that needed health care, that lost her health care and couldn't get her medication. That's Scott Walker's budget at work. That's the tools he's given us, and that's kind of sad. Well, we will be right back. I actually have to take a break. I have the station IDs and stuff going on, so let me take a quick break. After that, we'll have Matt Rothschild with Progressive Magazine.
You heard 16 tons in the coal tattoo. In the coal field, danger is nothing new. Question I'm putting to you. How much for the life of a miner? It should come as no surprise. You'll hear them spout the same old lies. Every time a miner dies. How much for the life of a miner? Somewhere far away from here, accountants will project. Actuaries speculate on causes and effects. No pesky regulations from the thieves that they elect. And auditors confirm the yields from their benign neglect. Each state sets a price for a leg that's lost. Lose an arm or an ear, there's a preset cost. When the air goes bad and there's no exhaust. Oh, how much for the life of a miner? A slap on the wrist or a paltry fine. Reversed on appeal on down the line. An act of God, the court opines. How much for the life of a miner? Politicians posture at the mine face solemnly. Live reporters swarm like flies around the tragedy. Preachers will proclaim the Lord behaves mysteriously. And PR spokesmen orchestrate deniability. And now their widows, sons and daughters come to you and me and ask how much for the life of a miner. How much for the life of a miner.
You are listening to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz. I'd like to welcome Matt Rothschild from the Progressive Magazine back to the Sarah Schultz Show. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me back. It's always nice to talk to you.
Well, it's wonderful talking with you, too. You just know so much about everything. It doesn't seem to matter what we talk about. You know about it. So it's great to have someone like that on and really talk about some of the stuff that happened in Wisconsin, but also nationally. I don't get a lot of the national stories, and it's important to hear about what's going on there, too.
Well, you know, I'm prepared to talk about anything. I don't know how deep I go, but, you know, they say about journalists we're an inch deep and a mile wide, but who knows?
Well, let's start out with a discussion about the National Defense Authorization Act.
Well, this is one of the scariest things to come down the pike in a long, long time. This is something that the Senate passed and the House passed an earlier version this year. And basically it says that the President of the United States or the Secretary of Defense can grab any American and just throw that person into Guantanamo, essentially. It says that if the executive branch, if the President calls you a terrorist, that you have no rights, that you don't have a right to a lawyer, you don't have a right to a trial, you don't have a presumption of innocence, they can hold you indefinitely. And that really isn't our system of government, but that's what we have before us. Now, the Obama administration is threatening to veto this, but I'm not sure it's going to when all is said and done, because after all, President Obama said he has the right to assassinate any U.S. citizen that he considers to be a threat. So we're in a real delicate, dicey situation here as U.S. citizens, that we have our democracy under attack on so many fronts, on the corporate front with the Citizens United decision and the way the corporations are just dominating every aspect of our political and economic lives, but also this attack from the executive branch that started under Bush and Cheney, where they set up all sorts of invasive techniques and also laws and edicts that have erected an edifice of repression that Obama unfortunately seems to be adding on to. So it's really important for people to be fighting back against all these things.
Well, and it really surprised me because it came out of the Senate. Unfortunately, I expect these kinds of things to come out of the Assembly. The House.
Yeah.
Yes. Too much Wisconsin. I expect it to come out of the House because so much crap has come out of the House. But to have this come out of the Senate, that's what really kind of took me back and kind of really surprised me on this.
Right, and there were a number of Democratic senators who were in favor of it, including Herb Kohl. And it's just astonishing that Kohl would go for this thing. You know, he's been on the judiciary for a long time. He understands that this is an assault, should understand this is assault on fundamental American rights, and he's not running for re-election. Hell, he's got nothing to risk here, and yet he was signing on to this thing too. So this is a real abomination, and it hasn't gotten enough attention. And it's just, you know, when one piece of legislation after another comes, you know, we have had the Patriot Act, we had the Military Commissions Act, we had this NSA spying, and now we have the Defense Authorization Act. And, you know, you look at it and you say, you know, if there's a real sinister president out there, they can really take this country in a whole nasty new direction. And we wouldn't even resemble a democracy anymore.
Well, what was the reasoning for voting for this? What did they give for that?
Well, the reasoning from John McCain is, you know, there are terrorists who are U.S. citizens, and we've got to be able to, you know, lock them up and not give them a trial.
Who defines who terrorists are?
Well, it's the same problem that Obama has with his edict that he can assassinate U.S. citizens. I mean, it's up to him. It's up to the president. It's up to the executive branch, both under Obama's assassination doctrine and under this Defense Authorization Act. So there's no check and balance. There's no division of power here or authority. And it's just a huge accumulation of power in the president's hands.
Can there ever be a point where they can look at someone that, and I don't want to say politically, but someone they say they don't like where they're standing and call them a terrorist and lock them up? I mean, this could really lead to some really bad, down a really bad road.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the problem, because there's no recourse here. If the president grabs you, you know, as soon as you're leaving your studio there, says you're a terrorist and sends you down to Guantanamo, what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to, I suppose, file an appeal, but, you know, that's going to go all the way through the U.S. Supreme Court if they allow it, and then who knows what's going to happen at the U.S. Supreme Court. So he's got the power, he's got the army, he's got the force, and if they pass this law, he's going to be able to, you know, basically do whatever he wants, he and his successors.
Is there any rights we have left?
Well, they've been just going the wayside. I mean, the Fourth Amendment right to privacy has been chiseled away and chiseled away. The First Amendment, we know, is being chiseled away here in Wisconsin in the worst kind of way. And there's the Second Amendment, which is the only expanding amendment there seems to be in this country. And the other ones are dissolving.
That's great. You have no rights except to carry a gun. Good luck.
Yeah, you're on your own.
Yep. There we go. We've got some military to back you, but that's about it. Now, this week, the Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius blocked the FDA allowing the morning after pill to be sold over-the-counter to teenagers. What's your opinion on this?
Well, this is just shameless and cowardly by Obama and Sebelius. I mean, here was a situation where the FDA has never been overruled. Never been overruled when it came down with some decision, but here the Health and Human Services Secretary overruled them and said that we could not give Plan B to teenage girls under the age of 17. And the FDA had studied it long and hard and concluded that it was safe and effective for preventing unwanted pregnancies. And look, girls who are under the age of 17 are in a terrible crisis situation if they find themselves or pregnant or worried that they may have gotten pregnant by some unprotected intercourse or some failed birth control device. And so, you know, within 48 hours or 72 hours, they can take this pill, but and it's safe. And yet here we have Obama and Sebelius saying, no, we're not going to let them do it without a prescription. And it's hard for some of those girls to get a prescription, certainly without their parents butting in and knowing all about their personal life. And so here you have a situation where, you know, it's about saving teenage girls from a huge crisis, an unwanted pregnancy, maybe a difficult pregnancy, or maybe, you know, something more complicated like an abortion. And yet they can't have it. They can't have it because Obama doesn't want to face a Republican negative ad when he's running in 2012. So the calculus from the Obama team was, you know, his reelection is more important than, you know, the pain and suffering of teenage girls.
What about the rape or incest of these girls? I mean, if there's an incest issue, you're not going to go to the other parent and say, oh, by the way.
There's
protection for them.
Right. It's just hideous, and it leaves them just totally, you know, trapped, and they're, you know, going to have the baby, or they're, you know, and it's just a horrible situation to put, you know, a 15 or 16 year old girl in. But that's the situation that Obama's leaving them in. I can't believe that there isn't more of an outcry from like Planned Parenthood. I went to their pages, and they've been advocating this forever, and, you know, they said it was, you know, they're extremely disappointed, and it was an unfortunate decision. Wow, I'd have been screaming my lungs out. But, you know, that's where we are.
Is there any recourse for girls under the age of 17 if they ended up getting pregnant?
Well, if they have a good relationship with their doctor and they can go see their doctor, maybe their doctor can give them a prescription without the parents. I don't know what the ethics of that situation are, but that's what I would encourage teenage girls to do.
What are the stats on teenage pregnancies in the United States right now?
I don't have them. The last time I read something, they were actually going down. But I don't, you know, I'd have to do a quick Google search to give you an answer, so I don't have one off the top of my head. But still, you know, there are lots and lots of teenage girls that find themselves in this situation. And to deny them a decent alternative to either having an abortion down the line or having to take, you know, this pregnancy to term, you know, that's an awful thing to have to impose on a teenage girl when, you know, in the situation you raised, that, you know, she's a victim of incest, God forbid, or in a more common case that, you know, she had unprotected sex or the birth control failed. I mean, you know, this stuff happens. Everyone knows this stuff happens. So why are we putting our head in the sand here?
And it just sets the women back. Again, it's probably the woman that's going to be taking care of the child, and they most likely than not will not finish high school, let alone go on to college, and you're setting them up just to fail from the very beginning. Plus, who knows on the nutritional aspect that the girl is going to be getting. Will the baby get enough nutrition if she's forced to keep it? You just don't know the situations going on here.
Yeah, it's a totally, you know, life-altering experience, and not for the best in most cases for these teenage girls to have to go through this, first of all, terrible crisis of, oh, my God, I'm pregnant. Now what do I do? And that's just emotionally wrenching for so many people. And then, yeah, if they have to take the baby to term and they have the baby, then their life horizons have shrunk dramatically. And you know, we're back at, you know, kind of Margaret Atwood dystopia.
And the stigma that's put on them by the other kids, it's just, you're just setting up it's just not a good situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's crazy that stigmas still persist here into the 21st century, but I know that they do. You're right about that.
Now, the Occupy movement had Occupy the Homes yesterday. Did you hear how that all went?
Well, I heard there was a lot of actions around the country, and I think this is an excellent move by the Occupy movement to try to actually occupy houses that are on the brink of being foreclosed upon, and to use the weight of this grassroots movement to defend people who are being tossed out of their homes because of, you know, reckless lending by the bankers or unscrupulous lending by the bankers. And sometimes also they were occupying buildings that were unoccupied, just in saying to people in these communities, if you're homeless, you should be able to stay in these buildings that have been vacant for so long. So this is a good way for the Occupy movement, which has been largely white and middle class, to identify with people who are, you know, suffering a little bit more than they are, and drawing alliances and coalitions. That's what we need, you know, really to move this thing forward. So that was one of two great things that happened with the Occupy movement this week, the foreclosure movement. The other thing, if I can just throw it out there, was in Los Angeles, the Occupy LA movement unanimously passed at a General Assembly a resolution to amend the Constitution and to deny corporations personhood, to essentially overturn the horrible Citizens United decision of 2 years ago that said corporations are people and can spend limitless amounts of money to influence an election. So the Occupy movement has seized on this, which is a natural place for them to go to. And then the City Council of Los Angeles 2 days later did the same thing and passed a resolution unanimously saying we need to amend the Constitution. And then yesterday Bernie Sanders came out with something, a constitutional amendment that he's proposing on the U.S. Senate floor to amend the Constitution and deny corporations personhood. So these are exciting things that have happened this week.
That's great. I'm hoping that other Occupies will catch on and pass that as well, so you get it through the entire Occupy movement.
Yeah, I think it's one of many demands that they could be issuing, but it really speaks to the essence of what that movement is about, the powerlessness of the 99% versus the 1%, and the 1% are the huge stock owners in these corporations and the chief executives of these corporations, and these corporations are running roughshod over our economy and over our political rights, so it's right up their alley.
And it's one of the things that I've seen on all the list of grievances, almost in every Occupy, that is that the money in politics or the personhood issue. So it's,
yeah, you know, it's been crazy that the corporate media says, you know, the Occupy movement, they're a bunch of people with only the vaguest ideas and no real concrete demands. As you're saying, every time I look at a list of grievances from any Occupy movement, this corporate personhood issue is near the top. And anyway, you know, we're the 99%. That's not an amorphous idea either. You know, that talks about income inequality right there, and power inequality right there. Actually, speaking of inequality, Obama had that big speech this week in Kansas on income inequality, where he was sounding very much like Bernie Sanders himself. Now, I trust Bernie Sanders. I don't trust Obama, so it might have just been politics. But the Occupy movement has brought this issue so much to the fore that the President of the United States felt he had to address it.
That's good. The more they can get out like that, and the more media they can get into, the better it's going to be, and the more they can start framing the conversation, because people need to think about that. They need to know, you know what, there is an income disparity, and guess what, you're not the ones getting the better deal of this.
Yeah, and the numbers are just dramatic. I mean, the top 1% or the top 0.1% of this country has seen their income go up just dramatically. Like the 0.1%, I think, has gone up something like 400% over the last 20 years, and then the rest of us have seen our wages stagnate, you know, the bottom 99%. So that's why the We Are the 99% movement is such an effective movement and such a clever way of putting it.
We are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and I'm speaking with Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. We're talking about the news story, the big news stories that happened this week. And Matt, we were just talking about the national stories, and I want to switch gears here and talk about the stories that have come out of Wisconsin these last couple weeks. Now, the DOA released their new rules last week. What's your take on them?
Well, this is just getting to the most ludicrous point here in Wisconsin, farcical almost, the way that the Walker administration is trying to crush our First Amendment rights here, and become, you know, more repressive than ever. I mean, they were kicking people out of the State Assembly gallery and arresting people. I and 20 others got arrested, you know, a month ago for holding signs and taking pictures, and people before us had been arrested too. And how crazy is that? Just nonviolently, quietly watching the legislators at work. So on top of that, now comes these new rules that say, you know, four or more people, if you're gathering in the Capitol or basically on any in any state building or on any state grounds, you can't do that unless you've gotten advance permission 72 hours beforehand from, you know, Walker's cronies at the Department of Administration. And on top of that, you've got to pay the price for any extra police duty that's called in at a cost of $50 a cop per hour. I mean, so he's putting a price tag on free speech here, and it's just ludicrous. Four more people, you know, you can bring your family there with anti-Walker signs if you've got, you know, if you've got two or three kids. It's just absurd, and it just shows how hostile these guys are to democracy, and they can't stand the heat. They think the people are a nuisance. They think those great sing-along solidarity singers every noon at the Capitol are somehow, you know, interfering with their work, which they're not. And anyway, this is supposed to be the people's house, and we're supposed to have free speech guaranteed not only by the U.S. Constitution but by the Wisconsin Constitution.
Well, how much more free speech can he actually take away from us? He's taken most of it.
Well, that's what we're seeing. That's what we're testing here. You know, how much more are they going to be able to get away with here? And you know, are they going to be able to get away with this one? I think there's going to be a huge challenge coming up on a week from Monday, I think on the 19th, either on Friday the 16th, a week from today, or a week from Monday, where the sing-along solidarity singers are going to be there in force. There'll probably be a couple hundred people there. I'm going to want to be there myself. And, you know, what's going to happen? Are they going to arrest us all?
That wouldn't surprise me.
Well,
and then charge
them. They might, but what needs to happen now, instead of having, you know, 20 people arrested in the State Assembly gallery, instead of having, you know, three or four people who've been arrested many times before being arrested, you know, this day and that day, is to have hundreds of people sitting down there, and if they want to put the Dane County Jail full of 100 people who are just exercising their First Amendment rights, then go ahead, have fun.
Speaking of being arrested, you did mention you're arrested. What do you have any updates on your case at all?
No, we got the case wasn't dismissed. We got another hearing, pretrial hearing, a week from today, and we'll see what happens. I think if they've got any sense, they'll dismiss it. Do they really want to be prosecuting 20 people for taking a picture with a cell phone quietly in the Wisconsin State Assembly gallery, or holding a sign that says "I love Wisconsin"? That's just absurd. But they didn't dismiss it the first time. I'm imagining expecting that they're going to dismiss it this time. But you know, if they don't, this is a great test case. This is a great case to take forward up through the courts and see exactly what kind of rights we have here in Wisconsin or in this country.
It's sad you have to do that.
Well, you know, it's not, I don't view it as sad. You know, I think it is sad in one way, but, you know, it's important, because if we don't exercise our rights, we don't have our rights anyway. And it doesn't, you know, there's not much risk involved. I mean, none of us is going to go to jail for a long time, and there'd be a fine to pay, and I can afford to pay it. So for me, it's nothing. But I do think it's important to, you know, resist these unjust laws and edicts that are coming down both here in Wisconsin and, you know, out of the Senate, like we talked about before, with that Defense Authorization Act.
Well, what do you think about Walker's appointee, Laura McCollum, to the Wisconsin's Labor Industry Review Commission?
Well, I was really shocked that McCollum didn't think that the Wisconsin state laws make it illegal to discriminate against people because of their sexual orientation, and that was some decision she made in a minority decision in a case that she was ruling on, that there's no protection under the statutes for discrimination against people on the basis of sexual orientation. There absolutely is. This is a pioneering thing that Wisconsin did, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And for her just to say, you know, it's not there in the statutes is just baffling to me.
But and that ruling was for a gentleman who was getting harassed on like a daily basis, wasn't it, at the place that he worked. And the two judges ruled against her, and she was the one dissenting voice in this lawsuit.
Yeah, horrible harassment, horrible name calling, death threats, and still she said there's no recourse for this person on a discrimination basis, and that's something that's amazing to me. But you know, a similar thing happened with Walker in his rules about Mark Pocan just wrote something about this on Walker's attempt to control free speech in this whole 22-page document. There was something buried in there that said, you know, the application of these permits will be governed by the anti-discrimination policies of the state of Wisconsin. But in there, it didn't list sexual orientation as one of the things that would be protected. It listed all the others: age, race, creed, color, handicap, marital status, sex, etc., but not sexual orientation. So it's not only McCallum who can't read the statutes, but it's the governor himself.
Is this a part of a pattern we see with the Walker, Clayfish, Fitzgerald regime with the taking away of people's rights then? Just one more right to take away?
Yeah, I certainly see that this in connection with the taking away of rights. And I also see, you know, the McCallum decision and this Walker thing about just completely ignoring what the statute is on anti-discrimination against people on the basis of sexual orientation. You know, one and one is two. I mean, that's a pattern. And so I expect there'll be more of this stuff coming down, not only taking our free speech rights, but acting as though there are no protected rights for people who are gay or lesbian in Wisconsin.
Let's talk about the 21 bills Walker signed into law yesterday. That was including the Murder Your Neighbor bill, otherwise known as the Castle Doctrine.
Yeah, this is unbelievable, this Castle Doctrine. And it caught my attention because the day that we were arrested in the State Assembly gallery, this was what was being discussed on the floor, the so-called Castle Doctrine, which means you can shoot to kill anybody not only who's intruding into your home, but who is stepping on your property or who's in your driveway, and this is my favorite part, who's in your swimming pool. Now, how many swimming pools are there in this cold state? I bet there's fewer than 10,000 swimming pool owners and maybe one-tenth of that. And so this bill was designed for the swimming pool owners. In the summertime, if it's hot out and some kids are running through your yard and taking a dip in your pool, you can just take a shotgun and shoot them dead. That's the law right now in Wisconsin. It's unreal. Or take another example. You're a biker. You got a flat tire, and you're pulling over, and you're in the farmer's territory. The farmer can just shoot you because you're changing your tire and you're on his property. I thought, this is what it's come to now. This is just, you know, legalized vigilantism.
And you're guaranteed basically immunity the way the bill is written. That basically says you're immune from prosecuting or for doing anything wrong if they're in your house or on your property. And then they passed the one of the laws he signed into – one of the bills he signed into law was the trespassing bill that came to us via ALEC. And it basically said that if someone gets hurt on your property, they have no recourse for it.
Yeah, this is property owners heaven right now in Wisconsin. Property owners, gun owners, mining companies have died and gone to heaven.
And who owns the properties?
Well, that's it. I mean, who owns the swimming pools? That's the thing. It's such a biased law. I have to laugh. I actually was trying to do a little reporting on how many swimming pools there are in Wisconsin, and I called some swimming pool association and D.C. and they never got back to me. And I called the public library here, and they couldn't find me a number either. But I'm curious about that.
It's probably not a lot.
You wouldn't think so, but this idea that, you know, if you own property, you are so privileged that you can go kill someone—not someone who's knocking down your door and threatening to rape your wife or kill you or your kids—but someone who's just, you know, wandering or, you know, cutting across. We always had growing up people cutting across our lawn to, you know, because it was a shortcut to the other to their homes, and you can't, you know, kids coming home from school or cutting through a yard. Wow, yeah, they better wear orange or something.
Yeah, put a bulletproof vest on.
Something. It's crazy. I mean, this is lunacy here in Wisconsin.
And then, of course, you can't vote anymore. And they're basically, if you're a landowner, you can vote. We're just going backwards in time here. We've made it back to the 1700s with what we can and can't do in Wisconsin anymore.
Yeah, it's a real rollback here to toward the day where you had to have property to vote. You can kill people if they're on your property. It's frontier justice, and free speech rights aren't recognized. And God, if you're gay and gay or lesbian, you're not recognized either.
It's how's the recall going?
Well, I haven't seen anything recall. since the 300,000 figure that came out, and I know your earlier guest was talking about it. My assumption all along has been that getting the 540,000 signatures was the easy part of this equation, and that the hard part was then beating Walker. Number one, Feingold isn't running, and it's unclear who the candidate is. It may be second best or third best or fourth best potential candidate. And secondly, the money is just going to be enormous. I mean, Walker's going to have $50, $60, $70 million to throw at the airwaves. He's already throwing it at the airwaves. We're seeing those commercials already, and it'll be wall-to-wall Walker. And so it's a 50-50 chance. I think people should realize this is going to be hard. And if they think, you know, Walker's going to be out of here in an instant, they're kidding themselves, because he's got a lot of money. And they can pull all sorts of tricks too. We've seen that happen.
With the lawyers and everything else, absolutely. Now, Tim Cullen has come out and said that he would be interested in running for governor. He's just one of the list of people, because although I think he's the first one to come out and say he's definitely interested, whereas the other ones have been kind of running around, talking maybe, possibly kind of deal. What's your take on Tim Cullen if he would run?
Well, I don't think he is going to appeal to the people who brought this recall movement about, because it wasn't like we saw him at these recall rallies. In fact, he was the one state senator of the Fab 14 who seemed most vulnerable to quitting, to scabbing. You know, Scott Walker in his famous phone call with the Koch brothers was saying maybe Tim Cullen would come over to his side. And Cullen actually had been in the Tommy Thompson administration. I mean, he's not exactly a champion of labor and of this movement that we see here. So it would be a peculiar choice for that reason. I know people think it's good because he's not here in Madison. I understand that. But I don't know if he would excite the people who had been behind this movement the whole time. I've been seeing some comments on Facebook, quite the contrary.
That was my concern, too, that he might hit a more of a demograph that is middle, little more on the conservative side of the Democrats, or a little bit on the more of the non-conservative side of the Republicans, but it would hit that kind of independent crowd. But I don't know if there would be anyone that would excite, or I don't know if he would excite the you're right, the protesters and the people who are more on the liberals, more of the progressives, and more of the left.
Well, and I know some people think, well, maybe that's okay, because those people are going to vote against Walker anyway. But, running the whole thing out to the end, it's not just about recalling this one puny man, Scott Walker. It's not like things are terrific with any Democrat in there. I mean, we had Doyle, and we had the Democrats in charge of the Assembly and the Senate, and didn't get a lot done. And with Cullen as governor, I don't think we'd get a lot done either. And so people need to recognize that too. But on the other hand, a Walker victory here would be a huge defeat for this whole movement that has come up over the last 10 months, and also would have national reverberations, which would be very negative.
All right, and with that, I'd like to thank you so much for being on, Matt.
Well, it's a pleasure as always. Can't wait to do it again.
Well, definitely. We'll do it in the new year. How about that?
All right, sounds good.
All right, have a great holiday, and I will talk with you next year then.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. That was Matt Rothschild, and he is with the Progressive Magazine. Now, after this quick break, we're going to get back with the I've been having problems with these buttons. I have one too many buttons in front of me, and I keep hitting the wrong ones. I'm sorry. I will get this figured out. Actually, I'm going to make my producer do it next time, so that way I don't have to worry about it. But here we go. We'll try this one now. That's better. We'll be right back with the United Wisconsin County Coordinators.
You'll know just what we are signing for. It's about the people taking back Wisconsin.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. So this is how crazy it's gotten here in Fitzwalkerstan, otherwise known as Wisconsin, under the reign of Scott Walker and the Fitzgerald brothers. Earlier this fall, a couple dozen of us were arrested in the Wisconsin State Assembly Gallery for merely taking pictures on a cell phone or for carrying a sign. Then on Friday, the Walker administration issued an edict that said if you're with four or more people in the Capitol, you need a permit to demonstrate there and you need to give 72 hours notice. On top of that, you got to pay the charges for any additional police work, a bill that runs $50 an hour per officer. They're putting a price on free speech in Wisconsin, and they're trying to wall off what used to be called the People's House. Hell, if you're a family of five and you're coming to protest the fact that you've been kicked off Badger Care, you may not have the privilege. But free speech isn't supposed to be a privilege. You're not supposed to have to pay for it or ask permission for it. It's supposed to be a right. And that's why many activists plan on challenging this new policy, including the wonderful Solidarity Singers, who've been holding a sing-along every day at noon in the Rotunda for 10 months now. I suppose Scott Walker's liable to have them all arrested, too, because he can't stand the heat. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Pass around the holiday recall to the board. We'll smile as we sign the recall petition. You'll know just what.
You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. And on right now, we have three county coordinators from United Wisconsin. I have Roberta Retram from Vilas County, Sue Goodson from Walworth County, and Tina Nelson from Dane County. So I'd like to thank you all for coming on the Sarah Schultz Show today.
Thank you, Sarah, for having us.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome. Well, thanks, you guys. And thank you for all your hard work, by the way. It's getting cold, especially in the northern area by you, Roberta. It's getting real cold out, and you guys are just trucking along and getting all those signatures. Thank you for being out there and keeping up the fight.
Oh, that's okay, Sarah, but I'm going to take just a second here because I'm on location and I have a person wanting to sign, so I need to tell them how to do this. So talk to the other two, and I'll be right back with you.
All right, Roberta.
Roberta's got a car set up there. She's had it there for days with signs all over the place. She's a one-band in her area and just doing brilliantly.
And that's what she told me. She said, I'll be out on the street corner, but I'll call in. I said, okay, you go, Roberta. So while she is busy, I actually have her on mute here so she can talk freely. So while she's busy, I'm going to ask, we'll start with Tina and then we'll go to Sue. How has the recall effort been in your area?
I think it's been fabulous. People have been really enthusiastic and signatures are still coming in. I've got a lot of things going on this weekend where people can come and sign. And on the 19th, there's going to be a total recall event going on statewide. We haven't worked out all the details of what we're doing in Madison, but it should be pretty wonderful.
Awesome. Sue, how's it going in Walworth County, the red area there?
Yeah, it's about as red as you can get over here. And yet we were at least halfway to our county goal in the first 20 days. It seems that even though we are quite red, people in this county and the grassroots people in this county are coming together, not only Democrats, but Republicans and independents, and seeing that Walworth County is hurt, too. We had $13.3 million in school cuts. Our public workers are taking home almost $2,600 less in pay this year, and there are almost 6,000 of them. So the extrapolation of that is that we're losing like $15.5 million out of the local economy. So, you know, wealthy red Walworth County isn't quite as pretty as people would like to think so.
Well, and Delavan is Walker's, he grew up there, I believe. How's Delavan doing?
Delavan is absolutely amazing. They've had drive-through petition signature events going on practically every weekend for the last couple of weeks. And oddly enough, the biggest ones take place in front of the wonderful elephant in Tower Park, right in the center of old downtown. And they have people running back and forth all weekend long with people coming up to their cars for signature signing. And it is going really, really well. Apparently it's going so well that when events are scheduled with Walker in Delavan, as for instance last weekend, there was a firefighters event that he was supposed to attend. He didn't show, and the only picture any of us got was a huge, huge, big red recall banner that was about 40 feet long and one person standing under it. So apparently he's a little afraid to come even come home now, too. We're enjoying it here, I have to tell you.
Well, and I'm going to bring Roberta into this. Roberta, how has the recall been up in Violas, I say that wrong all the time, Violas County up there? That's pretty far
actually,
north.
I think it's been pretty great, I think. I'm doing really terrific on my corner here.
That's great.
What are you up to, Roberta?
Pardon?
You're almost 700 signatures just on your own, aren't you?
Yeah, actually, as of yesterday, I had 650.
Good for you.
Wow. And that's just you getting them, right, Roberta?
Yeah, that's just me.
Roberta is a one-woman crew up there in Violas County. Now, Roberta, have you had any problems with people? This is to the other two as well, but I'm going to go down the list here. Have you had any problems at all with the Walker supporters? Have they been treating you pretty well?
Actually, it hasn't been as bad as I hear it has been in other parts of the state. I still, get fingers from people. I still get nasty things yelled at me. Yesterday, in fact, two guys pulled up next to me, and I had to ask them if they were there to sign because the Republicans have taken this topic here and either giving me a hard time or trying to talk to me about their point of view. And I actually got handed two pieces of literature by two separate people that happened to be the same piece of literature for me to read while I'm sitting in my car.
Well, that was nice of them. I bet it's all pro Walker, right?
Actually, it was something that was posted on Facebook yesterday, and I didn't know that until I got home from the thing, but it was a blog spot about the libertarian guy who puts something out saying how great Wisconsin was when we had all of our companies here, and it's all the union's fault that all the manufacturing has left Wisconsin.
Yeah, I read that, and boy, I have a lot to say about it, but I'd rather talk to you guys because it's a much more pleasant conversation.
Yeah, I had a lot to say to the guy who gave it to me, too.
I figured you might, Roberta. I didn't think you'd let that go.
Not hardly.
No. That's good. Good for you. Sue, how's it been going down there? Have you had any problems in Walworth County?
Well, it's been a mixed bag. There hasn't been much really obnoxious stuff other than the finger salutes and a little name calling now and then. Well, actually a lot of name calling now and then. But I live in Lake Geneva. And so we have a lot of positive reaction from the people in Chicago who think we're wonderful, and actually quite a number from our own citizenry. We have some business owners who are signing petitions on the sly because it's a little scary to go public around here about your support, but there has not been anything violent. I've had four recalls. Walker signs stolen, and my friends have had theirs stolen too. And actually, the confrontations have been more yelling at us for being teachers, and I'm not a teacher, and yelling at us to get a job. And most of the people I work with already have jobs, so it's not very intelligent confrontations we're getting, so we just kind of ignore them.
Is that, Tina, are you getting the same thing? Are they treating you well in Dane County, a little bit friendlier area there?
Well, the majority of people here, the response has been really positive. Of course, like Sue was saying, we often get the middle finger and get yelled at with, you hear the same things all the time. It's always get a job or something like that. I have two of them. So I really wish that they could come up with something new to say. It gets kind of boring after a while. But other than the finger and a little bit of yelling, it's been pretty positive.
Well, that's good. That's good that it hasn't gotten any worse. And I wanted to remind everyone, all my listeners, and I know you three already know this, but don't take any Walker supporter problems for granted. Don't just say, oh, it's just that. If it gets really a problem, especially if they pull off the side or just anything that they might do, make sure you get pictures, get the license number, and really make sure to file a police report.
Yes, that's good advice.
The police report's really important because you want to get these listed and you want to get them down. You want to let people know that this is going on. Now, what has been the biggest surprise as you collect signatures? I'm going to start with Tina first and go up. Tina, what was the biggest surprise you've had while collecting signatures?
Well, you know, I went to an assisted living facility a couple of weeks ago because this lady wanted me to stop by so she could sign. And while I was there, I had several residents that came up to me and who also really, really wanted to sign. And I guess just the biggest surprise for me was that, first of all, it's hard to get into these facilities. I had no idea that people, you know, had such a desire to sign in there. And so that was really just shocking to me. I don't really have any good surprise stories for you, but it was overwhelming. It was really wonderful to be able to help them out with that, and I was surprised by the amount of people that really, really wanted to sign.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great news. Sue, what was what's been the biggest surprise as you have gone out and collected signatures?
Well, one was actually last week or a few days ago, I can't remember when, a very nice gentleman came into our recall headquarters, which is up in the up in Elkhorn, and he signed the petition, and his address was in one of those lovely places that you know there's going to be high property taxes and not what people consider your typical recall supporter. And he said to me, you know, I hadn't quite made up my mind about this thing until I went to hear Walker speak down in Chicago. And he said, that man sounded like he was absolutely out of his mind, and I wanted him out of office in our state more than I could even begin to tell you. All he had to do was hear that guy really speak and really speak his piece to a crowd of whom he presumed to be his own supporters. So that was quite nice, you know. And again, it proved to our group that this isn't all, as people like to say, sour grapes or Democrats or whiners or those horrible people, teachers or public workers. That this man's philosophy and practices and overreach have affected everybody in the state who bothers to pay attention.
Roberta, what has been your biggest surprise while sitting on your street corner collecting all the signatures you've been collecting?
Actually, probably two things. One, the first 2 days that I did this, when we started on November 15th, I actually had 130 people each day sit here on my corner with me and sign, which I thought was amazing for this small town of 1,520 people to come here in groups of 10 sometimes, and I had to actually make a speech on how to fill the form out correctly. But the one thing that stuck in my mind the last couple of days was I had a couple of Republicans actually come and sign the recall petition. And usually when they do, they tell me that they do because they are, because when they were doing the pledges, they did too. I think they're ashamed of the way the government is being run down in Madison, not necessarily against anything that Walker personally or has done with the budget or anything else, but they just don't like the non-transparency of the government that's going on down in Madison. And I'm totally amazed that actually there are some sane Republicans around yet, because I also live in the town where Kim Simek is, and there are some insane ones here too.
Wow. Well, really quickly, we have about a minute left to go through this. Roberta, where will you be in this weekend with us, where people can come and sign?
Actually, this weekend, you mean starting tomorrow?
Or starting today. Where are you right now? If people want to come down.
I'm sitting on my corner in Eagle River across from the Rithco Credit Union on Highway 45 and Mill Street. I'm usually here every day except Monday from 8 until 2. However, next Tuesday, I will be in St. Germain where our fair governor will be at the Whitetail Inn, and I will be on the highway in front of him with my recall Walker Mobile, signing people up, hopefully, in front of his face from 10 until 1. and that's on Tuesday, December 13th.
You go, Roberta. That's awesome. Sue, what's going on this weekend in Walworth County real fast?
There are always recall happening in Delvin. In Elkhorn, our office is open from 10 o'clock to 4. That's right off the county square at 10 South Washington Street. There are people who just decide to go out and stand on street corners. They're in Lake Geneva. They're in Elkhorn. They're in Delavan. And just about any place you want to look. Next week is what we're really excited about, and I hope we have a chance to talk about that.
Well, I will get right back. Let me get to Tina, and then I'll get back to you to mention it real fast before we go, but I'm really running out of time. Tina, where can people find you or find out what's going on in Dane County this weekend?
Well, one simple thing that people can do is go to www.withdems.org and look under the events. You just have to type in your zip code, and that'll pop up all the places right away. People can also always go to the Labor Temple on South Park Street to sign. We have a lot of events going on this weekend. I know you're in a hurry.
there's a lot. Well, as long as there's a website people can go to, or United Wisconsin can also go there, can't they, and get some of this information?
Yes, county by county, you can find those out too, yes.
Okay, why don't we plan on doing that? And Sue, 30 seconds, talk about what's going on the 17th.
It is Saturday, December 17th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. all across the state of Wisconsin. Every town, every county, there will be a total recall event. It plans to be the largest petition gathering since the 15th of November, and to let everybody in the state and the nation know that we, the people, will prevail and take Walker and Clayfish down. We are thrilled about the county response we've had to this. Walworth County started this, and it's gone all across the state. Besides that, there's an opportunity for people to donate food and children's toys to their local food pantry or shelter or outreach organization, and it should be a very, very big thing. We're very, very excited about it and hope all your listeners will be participating.
I hope they all do. Even if you signed, at least bring something down to this. Well, first of all, my producer said thank you, ladies, and I'm going to second that. Thank you so much for all you've been doing to take back our state, and thank you for being on the show today, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah, for having us.
You're welcome. Have a great holiday season. Good luck, and keep getting those signatures.
Thank you.
Right. Bye, girls.
Bye.
Bye.
You were just listening to Tina Nelson from Dane County. She's the Dane County Coordinator. Sue Goodson, who is the Walworth County Coordinator, and Roberta Rettram, who is a Bayless County Coordinator for the recall of Walker. Now we're going to get to Richard Peeny. Hi, Richard.
Hi. And it's Penny. Okay.
I know I was going to, you know, I think I've said your name five different ways this
yeah,
so show.
Yeah, so does everybody else.
Okay.
The whole life thing.
Well,
no problem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Penny, I'll get that. So thank you for being on the Sarah Schultz show today. We have about 6 minutes left, and I'm sorry I kind of have to rush you through this. But
sure.
Quickly, can you tell people what you found out about the birth certificate issue and what the – first of all, tell them what group you're with, and then talk about the birth certificate issue you found.
Sure. I developed a website which has only been on the web for a week called getvoterid.org. And the org right now is just me. But the first thing I did was put together a report on birth certificates. Now, if you do not have an ID to go to the polls so you can vote, you need to go to the DMV, and you have to satisfy four different proofs to get your photo ID that you can then use to vote. If you don't have a photo ID, you're not going to be able to vote. And in the course of trying to figure out, you know, navigate the thickets of the voter ID law, I discovered that 48 counties, which is the vital records office in these counties, is where you get your birth certificate to take to the DMV to satisfy one of these four proofs, was actually requiring on the form itself that you have a photo ID. So in other words, you would need a photo ID to get a birth certificate to take to the DMV to get a photo ID. And this seemed like an impossibly ridiculous situation, that it couldn't possibly be true. Turned out 48 counties were requiring the photo ID to get your birth certificate. So it became apparent that this was a kind of a, this was definitely a deal buster for a lot of people. If you've got 177,000, I don't remember who did the report on this, 177,000 elderly people in Wisconsin that do not have photo IDs, for quite a few of these, any reasonable person would think that this would be a really big problem, that they would just not continue with the form because they don't have a photo ID to make a photocopy of to attach to get their birth certificate. Did I explain that well enough?
You did great, but the state themselves, they don't require the ID. It's just the counties have decided to do that, correct?
The law does not require a photo ID, that you attach a photo ID to your application for the birth certificate by mail. Now, unfortunately for me, and also fortunately at the same time, the day after I put out this report on the 48 counties, the state of Wisconsin changed their birth certificate form, the application form, immediately. And the story itself about the birth certificate is now, making its rounds, working its way up through the food chain of the media. I noticed that it got picked up by thinkprogress.org yesterday. So, the story for me now is that if you're an individual and you see something that looks fishy, act on it, because you have, if you're really true to your own beliefs and can prove it, you can really have an effect on the situation.
Well, what did they change it to? Did they just finally say that you don't need an ID to send it in, or what did the state change the form to?
Well, it's real interesting to me anyway. The form used to list a number of different alternative IDs. And what the counties seem to be able to have done with these, with their individual forms, is to adapt them. And over time, they've dumbed them down, or they've added big badges at the top of the form that you have to send a photo ID, or they've just cut out the second page of instructions. But the way it is now, the new form in their instructions says you have to have one of these to get your birth certificate by mail. You have to either send a photocopy of your driver's license, your photo ID, your, you know, the state issued ID, or an out-of-state driver's license, or two of these types of what they're calling IDs, a government issued employee ID, a U.S. passport. You know, these are photocopies you'd send in. A photocopy of your check or bank book, a photocopy of your credit card, a photocopy of your health insurance card, a recently dated signed lease, or a recent utility bill or traffic ticket.
So those are all acceptable IDs now to get your
first
certificate.
You have to send in two of these. Now, I ask you first, who's going to send a copy of their credit card?
Yeah, or bank statements.
Or your bank statement, you know, or even your passport.
Yeah.
In my experience, there are a lot of people who live in transitional housing who are like on their way up through the economic on the economic pole or on the way down, and they live in rooming houses. They have a room. They don't have a lease. They work, and they're. But they don't have a lease, they don't have utility bills, they don't have a bank account, they don't have health insurance. They have none of those things. So I asked the head of the Wisconsin Register of Deeds Association this morning, well, what if they don't have any of these? What do they do? And she says, we can't give them a birth certificate. So that means they can't vote.
Wow.
And I just got that information this morning, so... I'm not totally up to speed on the new form and what the ramifications are, but it definitely is an impediment to getting your ID, and it's being taken very seriously at the top levels of government now and being picked up by, I'm real happy to think Progress picked it up, because it means that there's some validity to it.
No, absolutely. And I have to get going because we've got about a minute left. So, but thank you so much. We'll definitely get you on again to talk more about some of the updates that come from this.
Yeah. Thanks. And if you want to help, yeah, it's getvoterid.org.
All right. Getvoterid.org. Go check that out. Thank you so much, Richard. Have a great day now. Thanks. Well, thank you so much for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for all his hard work on the show this week. You can download the show from iTunes. You can listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. You can also listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off the Sarah Schultz Show app for Android phones. And tune in tomorrow night at 6 p.m. to Citywide 99.1 FM in Madison. Remember Wisconsin Forward, Together Forward. Have a great week, everyone. I'll see you next week.